So yeah, as, you can switch. Cool. What is Cop City? This is the biggest screen I've ever been in front of. This is it's so pixelated. So a lot of folks are probably already familiar with Cop City, but Atlanta is also known as the city in the forest. And what that sort of means is of Atlanta has a higher percentage of tree canopy coverage than any other major metropolitan core in the country, in the continental United States. A higher percentage of tree coverage, even than the beautiful, even more, higher percentage than even in the Pacific Northwest, which surprised me. But, can you switch? This is even more pixelated. So, yes, it's the city in the forest, and it's just, if you've ever been to Atlanta, it's incredibly lush. There's trees everywhere, there's beautiful yet somewhat invasive vines growing all over everything, and there's vast swaths of uninterrupted contiguous forest. The largest of them all is the South River or Wilani Forest. It sort of like goes to here. And it's well over 300 acres, and it's smack dab in the middle of a largely black environmental justice community that's been at the sort of receiving end of corporate pollution for decades and decades and decades. We know the story. This part of the country's at one time produced the majority of the carpets and the rugs globally of anywhere, and that uses all sorts of nasty petrochemicals, microplastics, toxic adhesives, all that stuff. And in the middle of the South River Forest, the Atlanta Police Foundation and the City of Atlanta want to clear-cut it and build the largest police training center that the world has ever seen. The largest one. I'm a visual learner, so I insist on this. You can see this creek that's going down kind of this thing through the South River Forest, and on this side of the creek is called Entrenchment Creek Park, and it's being targeted by a hotshot Hollywood billionaire by the name of Ryan Millsap.
Boo.
Boo.
So initially, when this campaign was first launched in April of 2021, it was sort of defend the Atlanta forest, stop Cop City, no Hollywood dystopia. Because Millsap is trying to clear cut this other part of the forest to build the largest Hollywood soundstage anywhere outside of Hollywood. We'll be talking about the Stop Cop City campaign and not the No Hollywood Dystopia campaign. Out of breath, I gotta stop climbing up and down. So why are they trying to build Cop City? We understand the attempt to build Cop City is a direct response to the George Floyd uprising in the summer of 2020, for a few reasons. So after the sort of burning of the Third Precinct, within a matter of hours and days, thousands and thousands and thousands of police cruisers around this country were torched. It was, by every single metric, the largest uprising this country has seen in at least five decades since the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1968, and by some metrics, the largest uprising this country has ever seen. I'm normally not particularly sympathetic to this talking point, but the summer of 2020 was a really shitty time to be a cop. Everybody hated the police. It was at an all-time high anti-police sentiment, and police officers were actually quitting the force in record numbers. In order to sort of stem the bleeding, police and law enforcement agencies around the country did a few things. Despite the chorus of cries for defunding the police, as we all know, that didn't actually occur in any meaningful way in any major city across the country. Instead, many police budgets went up, right? They increased the number of shiny new military-grade weaponry that police officers were getting. They increased pensions, they increased salaries, they increased wages, and they built shiny new playgrounds to, quote, boost officer morale. It says that in the initial project proposal. It's a primary function for that. Above all, the forces that be in this country wanted to ensure that what happened in 2020 never occurs again. That is their primary function. In addition to that, as we all know, with increased climate crisis comes increased climate instability. With increased climate instability comes increased social instability. Mass migrations, the thawing of the global north, a creation of a new north, increased extraction operations, and there's sort of two ways that a society could sort of address that. One is like, try to prevent the climate from changing in the first place by like changing our society's habits, stopping fossil fuels, equipping communities to be resilient in the face of adverse weather patterns, things of that nature. Or we could police them. We could increase militarized control. Clearly some folks in charge have chosen the latter. And this is happening worldwide. Over the last 6 or 7 years, there's been an uptick in the number of police training facilities that are slated to being built around the country, including all of these places. I guess one final note, the language of Cop City. Why it's called Cop City and not just the Public Safety Training Institute, or as it was initially called in the first proposal, the Institute for Social Justice. Obscene, right? Is because it will actually contain a mock city, complete with mock blocks, apartment buildings, nightclubs, gas stations, convenience stores, streets and sidewalks, also that the police can practice contemporary urban warfare and riot control methods. Once again, to ensure that what happened in 2020 can never occur again. As we saw in the previous film, as many of us know, as advocates and activists and anarchists and eco-warriors have been saying for decades and decades and decades, every single time that a forest is slated to be clear-cut, but there are forest defenders standing in the way, who removes them? Every single time that there is an indigenous land sovereignty struggle and some random fucking corporations trying to build a pipeline through unceded indigenous territory and people are actively defending that process, who makes that possible?
Page.
Every single time that there's a prairie slated to be paved over and turned into an airport, there's a force that makes that possible, and that is the police. The hypothesis, the truth that the Defend the Atlanta Forest has said is that therefore the movement for the earth must be a movement against the police. What the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement has done, and they're not the first to do this, this is a common sentiment amongst various circles around the globe, right, for a long time. But what the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement has done is popularize this connection between the environmentalist movement and the abolitionist movement, for lack of a better word, and sort of said, no, in fact, these struggles are not separate. Social struggles, environmental struggles, economic struggles, policing struggles, racial justice struggles, gender struggles, all of this stuff is related and it's one. It's the struggle for a dignified form of life on this earth. And anybody who tries to separate those two, to separate any of them from one another, is either doesn't know what they're talking about or is the enemy, right? If what we can do, what the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement is trying to do is sort of, I'm picturing the meme here, take the environmentalist movement and the abolitionist movement and we hold arm in arm and we refuse to become separated again. If this truth can remain true for as many of us as possible, that will be a major advancement in the course of global struggles and American social justice movements. We're going to watch one more video from Mika Shaban Colonel. It's got subtitles and it's 2 minutes long.
My name is Shaban Colonel, and I'm here in the Willana Forest, which is just outside of the city of Atlanta in the state of Georgia. It was only a few months ago that I stood in this forest, reintroducing this natural world to my presence. I spoke my name and my clan lineage in our ancestral language in order that this natural world would know what right I had to stand upon this earth mother. I sang songs in my ancestral language, and I introduced my children to this forest and showed them the territorial domains where our ancestors thrived and from which they were violently removed from. I assisted in the first of many migrations of Muscogee people back to our homelands in hopes of educating our people that it even exists, and we have a right to walk upon them and live as we see fit. But I am here also in hopes of educating others of how to exist in this world, how to exist in harmony and balance with all of creation and all of its diversity, reminding us that violence in all of its many forms only eliminates the energy of life found in all. What is happening now in the Bilana Forest and also in the rest of the world is violence. Extractive industries and political entities are continuing to lead the way in perpetuation of this violence in this country and abroad. The destruction of one tree in violence impacts all of life. The desecration of one waterway can have harm to every member of this world. The so-called construction of a militarized facility to train paramilitary forces is violent. Its impact on the suffering our communities locally and potentially across the world is unmeasurable. It must stop before more harm even takes place. Today, I stand in solidarity with land defenders and allies who are working, petitioning, and acting at every level to end this violence. I stand in solidarity with those who have recognized the dangers of this facility and are working to speak the truth. I was taught by my elders to act accordingly with the interest of those lives yet to come to this world in mind in all of my actions. My hope is that they will not have to suffer. I pray that this forest will still be intact when I am able to make footprints upon it once again, footprints that lay over those of my ancestors who walked here for millennium after millennium. I call upon all persons to join this movement.
It cuts off there for some reason sometimes. Oftentimes, as activists, or like whatever we are, I feel like we, by the time we hear about some project or some fucked up thing that's going to happen, it almost feels like it's too late sometimes. Like, clearly there's been conversations that have been going on for months and months and months in boardrooms and secret meetings all around the world before we actually hear about what it is that they're planning on doing. And there's money behind it, there's momentum behind it, there's political capital behind it, and the gears have been turning, and now we, like, all of a sudden have to scramble to, like, try to stop this thing, which has all this force behind it. That is not what occurred in the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement. Activists, basically by digging through FOIA documents, publicly available and obscure records of obscure board meetings, as well as like not publicly available documents, learned about this project before it was announced. This was back in early spring of 2021. The first time that the general public heard about this was from people opposed to the project. That's where the language of Cop City came from. The first thing that it was described as is Cop City, as a deforestation effort. And that's that feels important, as we'll get out. And the first act against the project, it wasn't like a letter to the editor, it wasn't a protest outside City Hall, it wasn't sending postcards to Biden, it was sabotage of 11 pieces of industrial equipment at the construction site. This is significant for a lot of reasons. One, it's just objectively based. But also, it sort of created a situation where everyone who joined the movement after this had to reckon with this as the movement's origin. Right? This is the first thing that happened. These are the people who did this are the people who taught them about the movement, about the struggle that's going on, about fucking Cop City. Sorry, there's kids, I should stop. These people were never caught. No one who's ever done a single piece of industrial sabotage, late night shenanigans in the course of this movement has been arrested for those actions, period. It's never happened. The movement hasn't just been characterized by sabotage, though. There's been a bajillion other tactics that have been deployed. The diversity of tactics, there's other words for it too, but that's a common nomenclature about it. One of them has been putting public pressure on the actual companies that are slated to physically construct the project, right? So up at the top, we see the Atlanta Police Foundation. They're like a shady nonprofit corp, like slush fund for a police department to spend money on whatever they want. It's funded by corporations like Home Depot and Chick-fil-A, AT&T, Chase Bank, and unfortunately, Waffle House. R.I.P. And they contract Brass Field and Gorey, this very, very, very large construction company in the Southeast, to physically build the facility. Brass Field and Gorey doesn't do everything. They do a lot, but they don't do everything. So they outsource things like blueprints and schematics, glass, I'm assuming, as well as insurance for the project and even other like just general contracting things like that. Most of these companies, these random companies, we could make the argument because they're corporations or whatever, but most of them probably don't have like an explicit ideological drive to build the world's largest police training center. They just, their purpose in life is to install windows, and like that's what they want to do, right? So Brassfield and Gorey hits them up to install the windows, and then activists out of nowhere start bombarding their offices with phone calls, protesting outside of their offices, protesting outside of their houses, and make their lives a living hell. Make it way more trouble than it's worth and actually start affecting their reputation and their bottom dollar. And three of these companies have dropped off as a direct result of activist pressure. Wow. These are some photos of actions that have happened outside and apparently inside of some of their offices. But there haven't just been like protests. There haven't just been, no, don't do that. There's also been sort of like generative cultural events that have occurred as well. This photo right here in the middle is a photo of the 3-day music festival that happened in the summer of 2022. This is a photo of a Rory show that happened last year as well. And this photo up here is from the March 5th music festival that some folks might have heard about that happened earlier this year. We'll talk about that more later. There's also been good old-fashioned tree sits in solidarity with Young Thug and all prisoners. After DeKalb County closed Entrenchment Creek Park, the people the next day opened it up as Wilani's People's Park. As with like pretty much every major social justice campaign in the history of this country, various communities of faith are integrally involved, right? And this has been no exception in the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement. These are some photos of recurring Shabbat ritual dinners that have happened in the forest for an extended multi months in a row. These are some other photos of actions that were organized entirely or at least in part by various faith communities, including the Faith Coalition. And this photo right here is from a March 4th, 2023 reoccupation march of the forest. As Mika Shaban Colonel was saying, there's also been traditional Muscogee stomp dances. One happened inside of the forest and one happened outside of the forest in solidarity with the movement. It just got confirmed today that the Wilani Worldwide Tour will be going to the Muscogee Reservation in Oklahoma to give the presentation there as well at the request of residents from that area. There's also been riots. Yeah. Allegedly. These photos were taken at a march that happened earlier this year in January, a couple days after Tort was killed. Where hundreds of activists dressed in all black, protest tactic known as Black Bloc, where activists, you know, sort of all dressed exactly the same, obscuring their identities from the people around them so that specific acts can't be assigned to specific bodies. It's a tactic that they believe keeps them safer and keeps the people next to them safer when they engage in whatever way they find appropriate. Bean switch. There's also been kid-friendly events too, like bouncy houses, face painting. You can go three photos up. And marches that have been called for and led by preschoolers in the East Atlanta village of Atlanta. Never ever cut down the trees again. Just like the most straightforward common sense sentiment, right? Coming from our youngest. There's also been reforestation efforts that have occurred in the forest as well. So maybe in juxtaposition or in relationship to some of those massive, beautiful trees we just saw in the documentary previously, most of the trees in the Wilani forest are less than 25 years old. Not all of them, but most of them. It's been harvested continuously for hardwoods. There was a prison farm, though an active prison farm on the facility. Other atrocious things have happened in the past. But we're talking about a young forest inside of a city that's been there for a very, 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 very long time, but the trees themselves are pretty young. There's areas that don't have heavy tree canopy coverage surrounding that little creek that we saw. It's got a sort of floodplain type thing. So earlier this year in March, activists planted native fruit and nut trees, American plum, pecan, elderberry, hazelnut, aronia, fig, and more, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trees. We're good. And that will also occur on November 13th. There's also been civic channels of engagement as well. So this big photo behind me, this is a photo of the lobby of City Hall from earlier this year. It's popping, right? Where the city was slated to vote once again on increasing the budget for this project. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of residents spoke out against the project, delivering a record-shattering 16 hours of continuous public comment. So the Atlanta city council members had to sit there on their little stage like all day, all night, and until 6 a.m. the next day, listening to public comment, and they still voted 11-1 to move forward with the project. The day after that, activists announced the referendum. So that land itself, like the little map that we saw, the land that they're physically slated to build Cop City on is owned by the city of Atlanta. And the city of Atlanta is leasing it, like renting it or whatever, to the Atlanta Police Foundation for like $1 a year or something crazy. The referendum seeks to, a referendum is when you gather enough signatures from the general public to get like a votable object on the ballot that you can then vote on something of your choosing. It's like a way to like get something on the ballot in like a grassroots fashion. And what they were aiming to get on the ballot is essentially the legitimacy of that lease. Does this lease stand, or do the people of Atlanta cancel and revoke this lease because the land is owned by the city of Atlanta? So they announced this referendum drive, and immediately Mayor Andre Dickens, the mayor of Atlanta, comes out and says, no, you actually can't do that because we've already signed the contract. You see, like, we already signed the contract, so like if you actually try to vote against it, that would be in violation of contract law, and that would be unconstitutional. Just like no one buys this shit, right? Atlanta has a population of 500,000 people. In order to get on the ballot, has anyone here ever tried to get someone to sign a petition before? It's like sometimes like way harder than you think it'll be, right? out of the 500,000 residents in Atlanta, they need to meet like a certain threshold of signatures to get something on the ballot. The threshold they need to meet was 56,000 signatures in 2 months. And they needed 56,000 signatures of people with an Atlanta address who were also registered to vote in 2021. Out of a city of 500,000, they needed 56,000 of those. And instead, oh, one more, they changed that. They got 116,000. On the morning of Monday, September 11th this year, activists dropped off a colossal pile of paperwork, and the Andre Dickens instructed the clerk of Atlanta to say, "We're not even counting those things. We're not even going to count them." They taped the boxes up, stuffed them into a broom closet, and said that, "Well, actually, this is like actually your fault because like you're suing us, like we like you sued us, and then we sued you, and like we have to wait until like the court decides whether or not we can count them." So in this like bad faith legal runaround, right? Like nobody believes this shit. So activists sort of realized, "Oh wait, we just gave like our only copy of 116,000 of these petition signatures to the city, and they tucked them into a closet." So they asked, "Could you digitize them?" But each of these pieces of paper has everyone's full government name, full address, full birthday, and phone number on them. Each one, 116,000 of those. So the city activists basically pressure the city council to say, "Yes, digitize them, but redact all of that information except their name and like their birth year or something like that." And activists, "No, that should be okay." The city council said yes, they passed that, like basically instructing the clerk of the city of Atlanta to redact that information while digitizing it in order to put it in the public record. While it was on tour last week, the city of Atlanta essentially doxed all 116,000 of these people by releasing and publishing to the internet all of their information unredacted.
Blowjob.
Which brings us to where we are today. In addition to all of this, there's been extreme repression against this movement, right? What we were talking about earlier, that arm in arm, I can't do it with a mic in my hand, but the clasp, you know, between the environmentalist movement and the racial justice and abolitionist and anti-police movements, saying we are fighting together for a dignified world, that is the most threatening thing to a lot, that is one of the most threatening things that can happen to the people in power. So they've come crushing down on this movement. This movement is one of the most resonant environmental justice, anti-police, and racial justice movements this country's seen in a very long time. And hundreds of thousands of people around the globe are watching this movement, wanting to see it win, right? And the police have come down extraordinarily heavy-handed, albeit rather incompetently. On January 18th of this year, the police, in a mega raid, raided the Wilani Forest, where there was a forest occupation happening there, and shot Tortuguita 57 times. 57 bullets hit their body. Like, how many times did they shoot? Immediate cover-up, where they say that the autopsy report reveals that Tort was sitting down, crisscross applesauce, with their hands in the air and their palms facing away from their body, with no gunshot residue on their fingers and 57 bullet holes inside of their body. Tort's dad, Joel Esteban Paez, came to the Wilani Worldwide Madison, Wisconsin tour stop and gave a presentation there before the presenter there opened, and said that the gun that the police claim belonged to Tort, that Tort fired at the police, didn't belong to Tort. That's what Tort's dad said like 2 weeks ago. And that for some reason the police targeted his kid. It was one of the first times that Tort's dad has spoken out in public like that. In addition to that, there was a raid on the March 5th Music Festival. There was an action that occurred earlier that day at the construction site about 2 miles by foot from a music festival that was happening on the other side of the forest. Big forest, right? For payback from the action that occurred at the construction site in which zero arrests occurred, a mega raid with hundreds of cops came to the March 5th Music Festival and arrested as many people as they could get their hands on. And then it was revealed later that every person before they were booked and brought down to the station, they were asked what their address is, normal question or whatever. Everyone who had an Atlanta address was let go so that they could sort of construct this narrative, this racist, outdated, washed up narrative from the civil rights movement and the anti-civil rights movement of the outside agitator. And this photo here is a SWAT raid on the private residence of three activists who run the Atlanta Solidarity Fund, one of the most successful bail bond funds for a city in the country. And it's important to note that to this day, the Atlanta Solidarity Fund is still fully operational, in good standing with the IRS, and is accepting donations today. We also talked about the RICO charges earlier. RICO is a very, very severe legal mechanism used to target the mob historically. And it basically, 61 activists were indicted on these extraordinarily severe charges. And if you read the indictment, I encourage folks to at least check it out. It's a 109-page document. It's rather long, but it's jarring. The first 10 pages of this document that was released in mid-September, I believe, early September, September 5th of this year, the first 10 pages of it is like the Wikipedia article copy and pasted of anarchism in the U.S. or something like that. It's really strange. They say that, you know, anarchists are engaged in mutual aid, in distributing zines, and they engage in social solidarity, sometimes called solidarity. It's just like so bizarre. And funny. Written by AI, perhaps, or some overpaid, you know, overworked underling. And just today, they announced that there will not be charges against the cops that murdered Tory.
Fuck that. Fuck that.
Never have, and they probably never will. Just because it's dark, and in the interest of time, I think I'll probably read this little handout. I would like everyone to, if they want, if they feel so moved, to hold on to that and keep it and put it on your fridge or whatever. Can people read it? Can people see it in their hands?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to read the first paragraph, and then I'm going to stop and... Ooh, wow, that was so sick. I'm going to read the first paragraph, and then I'm going to stop and someone else just chime in and read the second paragraph and go all the way to the end. It should take a couple minutes. But this is why we're all here. This is an invitation, a call to action. Join us for a mass mobilization in Atlanta, Georgia, to defend the forest and stop Cop City. On the morning of November 13th, masses of people from across the city, state, and country will gather in the Beulani Forest and bring construction to a halt. Together, we can block Cop City.
For 2 years, a movement has been building. This movement has drawn in people from all walks of life and using all means of resistance, canvassing, pressure campaigns, speaking out in City Hall, children's marches, traditional Muskogee, stomp dances, music festivals, weeks of action, sabotage, and demonstrations all across the country. This is the secret of the movement's inner strength, that it is large enough to contain multitudes, and that it finds within itself an endless capacity for innovation.
The power of the forest has always unquestionably been in the conflictuality of its defenders. Thus far, the defense of the forest has included both violent actions and actions that are not violent. But people carrying out not violent actions, who may or may not be the same ones carrying out violent actions, have not labeled their activity as specifically non-violent. This struggle has grown because people are inspired by its conflictuality. So why make a shift to explicit non-violence?
Hey,
now?
Excuse me?
The struggle is certainly at a crossroads, but the path being proposed is a disavowal
Homie,
of all
can you please not like disrupt and heckle this presentation?
The
there were some folks at the Atlanta, at the Oakland. It's well written, I appreciate it, but please don't heckle this presentation right now. This presentation's going around the country, and in Oakland, California, at the Anarchist Book Fair, a few hecklers like disrupted my friends giving the presentation about 15 times, and then published a flyer online and encouraged people across the country to do that as well. So that's what's occurred.
I would appreciate it if you made me hear it out.
The beating heart of the movement has been in the forest. The forest encampment and the forest itself, sustained for over a year, has been key to the movement's effectiveness. Forest defenders, sometimes dozens, at other times hundreds, sleeping in tents and treehouses, put their lives on hold and their bodies on the line. Their determination and courage capture the national imagination. By physically blocking construction, this open space and bought time for many other effective ways of participating to become possible.
The movement now faces unprecedented repression. A series of multi-agency police raids on the protest encampment have finally cleared the way for construction. During a raid on January 18th, our beloved comrade Manuel, Portuguesa Paez Caron, was shot and killed by police. 43 forest defenders now face authors of domestic terrorism.
We are proposing a strategy to grow beyond the repression. The efforts to defeat the movement have backfired. The repression has catapulted a seemingly local struggle into the forefront of national consciousness. More people than ever are getting involved, and the momentum is only growing. What is needed is simply to give form and direction to this momentum and scale up our resistance.
The movement to stop Cop City is more popular than ever. 116,000 local residents have signed petitions for a referendum on Cop City, which would allow the people of Atlanta to decide the project's fate through a popular vote. However, the mayors and the administration continue to undermine the democratic process, and they are refusing to even count the petition signatures in the bad faith legal program. But construction can begin any day. Over 85 acres of forest have been cleared cut. Without a legal order to halt construction, whatever happens at the ballot box will be too late.
We will have to do it ourselves. The people will have to enforce their own stop work order. This is the only way to honor the overwhelming popular sentiment in favor of ending this project. With our future on the line and the whole world watching, we'll take a stand to bend the course of history. Join us in Atlanta from November 10th to the 13th for a powerful collective action. And I do want to just, you know, admit that like part of revolutionary strategy is offering competing views and is offering different ideas, and I totally get that. It would just mean a lot to me to not get interrupted on stage. And I'm down to talk afterwards. I really am.
How exactly did nonviolent tactics overcome the resistance that isolates and divides us?
Well, maybe if you listen to me talk, you'll find out. Just please. I'm sorry, that was a little rude of me, but this is also a little rude too. It's a good question. It's a really, really good question. It is a very good question. So right now, the movement is facing a massive uptick in repression, right? We know that. The worst response that we can do is give into fear and shrink. That's the worst thing that we can do. In the course of this movement for the last 2.5 years, there has never, never been an embodied action of 500 people on the Cop City construction site. That's never occurred. To do so would be an objective, material, and tactical advancement in this struggle.
I mean, March 5th is like 300 or 400. Like,
about 200, sure, but...
not really.
Numbers aren't entirely arbitrary.
Yes.
And I know this is important to you. And I know that's why you're doing this. And it's not easy. You would care. And I want to acknowledge that too. It's probably not the funnest thing in the world.
Numbers of everything.
And now my heart's beating very fast.
You got this.
Stop the PowerPoint.